Yes, yes, perfect, yes, yes.
As Andrew said, now, I'm not going to sort of give you a whole spiel with all the bios, because you've got them in the pack. So I just want to just very briefly introduce you to Helena Hargarden. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, actually.
That sounds lovely.
Oh, okay. Who is a senior transactional analyst for Metanoia.
Am I? I left there some time ago, actually, but never mind. Is it okay? Is this okay? Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Okay, is that better?
That's better.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So, good morning. I'm going to talk about Martin Buber, whose central philosophical idea of the intersubjective structure of I-Thou forms the bedrock of humanistic and relational theories. I also discuss Buber in relation to Carl Rogers and, of course, Carl Jung. Now, I'm going to begin, decided to begin with this, because when I was preparing this presentation, this thought came into my mind, a snapshot of a scene that happened in my practice 25 years ago. And I thought it would be useful to share this and for you to be thinking from your different perspectives, humanistic and Jungian, how you would think about this scene or this event. 25 years ago, I had completed 1 year in person-centered counselling and 1 year foundational course in transactional analysis psychotherapy. I was taking a year out so I could prepare for my counselling exam. I had 1 year in a psychoanalytic therapy group and 2 years in a TA therapy group. I was full of what at the time Petrushka Clarkson described as therapeutic fervour. Extremely enthusiastic, loved the work, and I'd begun a small private practice. I had no idea about the unconscious, it wasn't ever mentioned. 23 years ago I went into Jungian analysis, and I've been there on and off ever since, and now I feel like I do know a lot about the unconscious. Anyway, I was working with a male client for 3 years before this incident happened. During the first 3 months of the therapy, the client spent much of his time describing in detail his reverence for Bartok, the composer, his use of atonality, often using numbers to get his point over. Apparently, Bartok did not follow the traditional lines of musicality. Looking back, I can see he was probably on the autistic spectrum, but back then I had never heard of that condition. I'm afraid that despite my attempts at empathy, I made a mental note never to listen to Bartok. I can now, of course, realise that he was trying to communicate his difficulty with emotional connection. Back then, my response to my client's communication was to jump up and down quite frequently to a whiteboard. At that time, and still it still is for some, it was thought appropriate and helpful to have a whiteboard in one's TA consulting room. Trying to empathically, of course, understand him as I imagined it, I would draw circles and triangles on the board, referring to ego states and the drama triangle. If anyone could have seen us, we would have looked a rather odd couple. Him with his algebra and arithmetic, and me with my geometry. Both seeming to speak in foreign tongues. Nonetheless, something much more important was happening under the surface, since he was still there 3 months later. But I had no consciousness of that then. On an evening before his next appointment, one of my sons was ill, and I was up all night with him. I cannot recall what the illness was, but I was pretty anxious, and all the more so because any child's illness made me fearful and overly anxious of pending loss, constellating within me my infant, who had had several times been hospitalised and no doubt suffering from what Buber calls, excuse the pronunciation, Bergenung, which in his term meant mismeeting. On this day I was shattered, and strictly speaking I should have cancelled it, but I stoically carried on. All, maybe there's another way to think about this. I shall be asking you for your thoughts later. In my exhausted state, I was in that twilight place between waking and sleeping, where all things feel uncertain and not quite real. The place Keats, the poet, described as negative capability. The place, he said, all poets need to be if they are to get in touch with their creative capacities. I was tuned in to the vulnerability of myself and others, into the sickness in myself and the other. I was not in the state of mind to jump up and down at the whiteboard to draw circles or triangles. So instead, I sat in my vulnerable state and listened, probably in a very qualitatively different way than I ever had before. As I sat there, I was also hoping that he would not notice that I wasn't doing my job properly. I don't recall what I said, but at the end of the session, the client got up, pulled on his pinstripe jacket, picked up his briefcase and turned to me. And after a pause, when it seemed he may or may not say what was on his mind, with me dreading to hear him tell me how I had failed as a therapist, he looked me directly in the eye and said, "That was our best session yet." I was stunned. As I watched him leave the room, I caught a sense of the vulnerability of his body bundled up in his pinstripe suit and felt a swell of sadness inside of me that I had never felt before. As I reflected on it, I felt something else, a sense of my value as a human being. They say, well, we say, our clients or patients come to tell us what we need to learn. It dawned on me in those moments that there was something new that I had not been taught. They, and we also say, that the analyst has to change and accept her vulnerability. It was through a sick child that I had changed, not through any theory. But we do need theory to think about ourselves. So, in thinking about this vignette, maybe we can draw out together some of the differences and similarities between humanistic therapy and Jungian analysis. I'm going to say a few things first about Buber. Buber was born in Vienna in 1878. His parents separated and he was sent off to Poland to be with his paternal grandparents in 1882. He studied language, literature, philosophy, psychology in Vienna, Berlin, and Zurich. Philosophical influences upon him were Nietzsche and Kant. In 1890, he moved to Berlin, where he became involved in early Zionism. In 1904, he moved to Frankfurt to fill a lectureship in Jewish religious studies and ethics at the university. And in 1937, he immigrated to Jerusalem. Just putting him quickly in a biographical context. His writing on religious studies and philosophy made him a revered figure consulted by people from all around the world. The centerpiece of his therapeutic ideal of healing is through the I-thou contact. He called it believing humanism. Now, I'm sure you will agree that most theory is in fact autobiographical, and the roots of Buber's ideas are recounted in his autobiography, in which he describes his response to traumatic loss. This is just a little snippet from his autobiography. "The house in which my grandparents lived had a great rectangular inner courtyard, surrounded by a wooden balcony extending to the roof, on which one could walk around the building at each floor. Here I stood once in my fourth year, with a girl several years older, the daughter of a neighbour to whose care my grandmother had entrusted me. We both leaned on the railing. I cannot remember that I spoke of my mother to my older comrade, but I still hear how the big girl said to me, 'No, she will never come back.' I know that I remained silent, but also that I cherished no doubt of the truth of the spoken words. It remained fixed in me. From year to year, it cleaved ever more to my heart. But after more than 10 years, I had begun to perceive it as something that concerned not only me, but all men. Later, I once made up the word Vergennung, meaning mismeeting or miscounter, to designate the failure of a real meeting between men. When, after another 20 years, I again saw my mother, who had come from a distance to visit me, my wife and my children, I could not gaze into her still astonishingly beautiful eyes without hearing from somewhere the word Vergennung as a word spoken to me. I suspect that all that I have learned about genuine meeting in the course of my life had its first origin in that hour on the balcony. So this I and thou, Buber goes on to say, differs from the I-it. He describes this as a personally intimate encounter or meeting. Now, why does this intimate dialogic contact matter for our work? I of I-thou is different from the I of I-it, because how we stand in relation to the other changes us. In the I-it, we can stand outside, observe, detach. But when we allow the other to speak to us, something very different happens. Lynn Jacobs, the Gestaltist, says something I think that's really interesting. She describes it as this. She says, the I-thou attitude, so obvious with a good teacher or therapist, interpenetrates the highly valuable discussion of content that is in the I-it realm. It is the interpenetration that makes the I-it meaningful, usable, I believe. And evil is a consequence of alienation from the world of I-thou as a possibility. Buber argues that relationship is primary and that the longing for relation can shape our lives in compelling ways. Buber describes mismeetings as a traumatic relational experience that creates fears and longings. This is, as we know, has been described well by attachment researchers. In the I-thou dialogue, Buber describes how such dialogic relatedness involves elements of surprise that we should expect to be caught unawares, because this other person is not part of me. He says, the actual other who meets me in such a way that my soul comes in contact with his as with something that it is not and that it cannot become. My soul does not and cannot include the other and yet can approach the other in this most real contact. He says, the chief preposition for the rise of genuine dialogue is that each should regard this partner as the very one he is. I'm aware of him, aware that he is different, essentially different from myself, in the definite, unique way which is peculiar to him. And I accept whom I see, so that in full earnestness, I can direct what I say to him as the person he is. We can therefore expect disagreement, conflict, misunderstanding. Now, Carl Rogers was born in 1902 in the States and was influenced by Buber. They seemed to have had a deep connectedness demonstrated in their famous public dialogue they had in 1957. Carl Rogers said after that dialogue, this recognition of the significance of what Buber terms the I-thou relationship is the reason why, in client-centered therapy, there has come to be a greater use of the self of the therapist's feelings, greater stress on genuineness, but all of this without imposing the views, values, or interpretations of the therapist on the client. I could not quite see how Buber was influenced by Rogers, but perhaps other people know that. He seemed to have quite a different view of empathy. He calls it inclusion, which is a different issue in which he describes the therapist or the person of I staying very much in his own concrete reality, which seems to me different from what Rogers says about empathy. Buber argued that the I and thou attitude provides a clear structure familiar to anyone with a candid heart and courage to stake it. It is the origins of humanistic thinking in the idea of reciprocity. And mutuality. These ideas, as I said before, are the bedrocks of humanistic theory and relationality. He also argued that it's not possible to have complete mutuality, that it is a form of grace for which one must always be prepared, but on which one can never count. The IU relationship of teacher-student, therapist-patient, spiritual leader-congregant may never unfold into complete mutuality if they are to remain faithful to their nature. End of quote, arguing that the helpful relationship is asymmetrical by nature. So now Carl Jung, born in 1875, 3 years older than Buber in Switzerland, they seem, Jung and Buber, have more in common with each other than they did with Freud. Jung also believed in moments of meeting, in the therapist changing in those moments. Those elements of surprise described by Buber are compatible with Jung's ideas of synchronicity. Where they differed, though, is essentially in the realm of the significance of the unconscious. Buber and Jung had a fallout over their different views of spirituality and God. For Buber, God was real, whereas Jung thought of God as part of the psyche, as in God image. Jung offers us rich, elaborate structures which open up a multi-layered world of the unconscious. He provides a language to enable an exploration of the mysterious, the unknown, the unknowable, through his metaphorical reincarnation of the world of alchemical processes, the collective unconscious, the shared unconscious, intersubjective world of inherited archetypes common to all people. Whereas Buber's I Thou introduces us to the earliest ideas of intersubjectivity and the in-betweenness of us, now what is, I think, referred to as the idea of the third intersubjectivity, much later brought to our attention by Daniel Stern and others, Jung captures the realm of the unconscious intersubjective relatedness. For Buber, the I-Thou is intimate, surprising, risky, and may well take us into the realms of the unconscious. In fact, I think it will. For instance, Buber says that taking the dialogic path is risky because it involves working in the dark, in worlds of traumatic devastation, uncertainty, loneliness, and loss. This way of being described by Buber seems to me to take us into the world of the unconscious, but does not really include a language which would illuminate that journey into the metaphorical forest, or quite capture the bidirectionality of the relational unconscious. Nevertheless, all three of these people, Buber, Rogers, and Jung, are all asking a version of how do we get to the depths. Now, in the vignette I described before, I called it, "A soul is never sick alone," which is one of Buber's famous sayings. So my questions to you, how do you understand from these different perspectives what happened in that event? Where is the overlap with humanistic and Jungian analysis? Where is the difference? How is my use of self compromised on the one hand by my lack of knowledge, both theoretical and of myself? And on the other, how does the value of humanness and reality and archetype of the sick child allow the light to get through the cracks in this therapy? What are your thoughts and comments about this? Should I have cancelled the therapy? I felt that the therapy police might tell me off when I was sitting there, not jumping up and down at the whiteboard. Why didn't I? Why didn't I cancel? What might have been going on there? What, if any, was the significance of Bartok in this exchange? What were the diagrams significant? What archetypes were afoot here? I'd really appreciate any thoughts or reflections you have about what you think may have been going on there, what you heard as I recounted that story. I know you've got thoughts. Don't be shy. Any thoughts are welcome, because we're going to tease out the differences. Aha!
Do we need a mic? Just one sec.
You have to hold this really close.
It's so good, yeah. It's a question, really. You said... Sorry, is that... All right. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's a question. I was interested in the quote about healthy relationship as asymmetrical. Could you say a little bit more about that or give examples?
I think it was Buber's quote, and it's one that I certainly concur with because it's my experience that if... No matter how mutual or reciprocal we are in the relationship, or vulnerable, there is an inbuilt asymmetry into the relationship. And I think in humanistic circles we get confused between the words equality, mutuality, and reciprocity. And I think what Buber does so elegantly is show us how we are human and being in ourselves, being reciprocal, mutual, vulnerable, but to be true to the nature of the relationship, there is an asymmetry. And if we deny that, then we're sort of denying a type of reality that doesn't help anyone. That's my thought.
Should people say who they are? Yeah.
My name is Batma. I'm a psychosynthesis therapist. The session you're talking about, for me, felt like when you stopped and went behind the circles and triangles, you went behind the symptoms and the two souls met.
Yes.
And that's what, for me, I was calling when you were talking about your client.
Absolutely. And I think for my soul to be revealed, I had to go through some process which made me vulnerable against my better judgment. I didn't want to be vulnerable.
Hello, my name's Anna, and I'm a person-centered therapist. I would say that you gave the client a really good experience of being listened to. And Roger says that we are at our most helpful when we are most human. And there's something about your vulnerability that brought that connection.
I think it did. I think what was missing is my consciousness, because I really didn't have enough consciousness to contextualize some of what might have been happening in the relational unconscious. And I can't remember a thing about the therapy except this snapshot. I remember he left in good terms, but he'd only been able to go as far as myself had been able to be in the relatedness. And I think that's what I learned from my Jungian analysis, is that the unconscious really was completely unconscious, and I didn't have any idea about the idea of my sick child, the archetype, the influence of that. Had I have had that, then I would have been able to probably share my mind more fully with him in a way which would have developed and extended his mind and heart. That's what my thinking is.
Someone ever.
Hello, one, two. It's Duncan Stoddart, client-centered therapist. Just leading on from what you said there, the vulnerabilities you talked about, and that you seem to have, if I'm right, a kind of access to your own unconscious, because you were that tired that there wasn't a sort of more conscious effort required for protection, shall we say.
Yes, absolutely.
And it points to how we are when we are, you know, normally energised and able to do our work. It sort of points to, you know, how in touch we need to be to the deeper parts of ourselves in order that the client may also go there with us or with, us with them.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think that I think most relatedness happens at the level of unconsciousness. So I think he knew me and I knew him in a way that neither of us fully understood.
I was pointing to...
There's someone here who's quite early.
Oh, okay. And then Anne, yes. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Kuladitcher. I'm Kuladitcher, psychosynthesis trained. I want to go back to your previous point. You said what was missing was the understanding of your own wounded self.
Yes.
I think it was really important that was missing. I think it was so good that you weren't in touch with any theory at that point, and that allowed you to be just human and vulnerable and make that connection, it seems to me.
I agree with you and I disagree with you. I agree with you in those moments, but I think we can have theory and also be vulnerable. And I think had I have had a theoretical perspective, then I could have probably done a much longer therapy and more and a deeper one with that person. I think we met underneath the topsoil, but I don't think we went very deep. The potential was there, but I doubt we went that deep.
Hello. Anne Young. I'm a Jungian analyst, or I work as a Jungian analyst. Something you said about God was real for Buber, but the God image was part of the psyche for Jung, which is something I struggle with, this sort of split, which is so difficult to just discuss with theologically minded people who... And I suppose I'd just like you to tease out a bit more what God being real means for Buber, if you can.
Sorry. what do you think it means?
I see, for me, I see very much your experience of what might be, or what you understand to be the God image within your psyche.
Yes.
And yourself as actually that which is of God. It might, I mean, God, as it were, is all blinding, but ultimately, I don't really see a separation, and I have endless arguments with a theologian friend of mine about this. So I don't know if other people have ideas.
Yeah, does anyone else have any thoughts about Anne's comment, question about the difference between God as part of your psyche and God as something else?
I think that's the whole conference.
Well, just one very brief. I think we do make this distinction between... I think we make a distinction between inner and outer. And one of the things I enjoy about Jung is he didn't make that distinction so much.
You can't...
And talk, oh, sorry. We make a distinction between inner and outer. And I enjoy Jung because he doesn't make that distinction so much and talks about the psychoid. So is God within, is God without? It's a false question, I think.
Thank you, that's
good. I think we can do one more quick question.
Yeah. I'll just finish.
Oh, two more to go.
Just
someone,
yeah, I'll finish up.
There's someone here who's had their hand down, has it?
Just the sentence, just the sentence.
I don't know, but it's that worth saying. I'm Beatrice, I'm a person-centred therapist, and what that vignette said to me most clearly was what we do with our theory, and I think this can apply very much as a trainee, but I think it can apply more and more in different ways, and more knowledge, not just theory, but knowledge and wisdom that we have. And it seems to me, I really agree with her, I can't remember your name, that said that you not having anything going on in your mind was what allowed him to feel that was the best session ever. And you were not being the expert. You were really, really listening, and he could feel that.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I think I find it increasingly difficult, the more I know, really? The more experience I have, to be as open as I was in my second, third year of being a therapist.
Oh, how really interesting. I think that's what Petrushka was getting at about therapeutic fervour, that we bring some soul into the relationship that later perhaps gets a bit clouded or diminished, and perhaps our job is to keep trying to return to that. That's I really like that point, and I think that's a good place in which to end.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Helena.
Thank you very much.
There is a point on Bob down here. I think you'll have to wait, but that hasn't been mentioned.
This what?
Bartok.
Yeah.
Which is the missing...
Maybe we can come back to that later.
Yes, exactly.
I'll just switch.